to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
With the top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
As we continue with the adventure of this show, let's start right here with Illinois declining in population for the fifth year in a row, 45,000 less people this year than last year. I used to joke about this, you guys, as you probably remember. I said, there's too many people here. Some of you have to leave. I was just kidding.
Right. You don't really have to go.
Losing 45,116 residents from 2017 to 2018, according to the latest Census Bureau information. It's a greater drop than the previous year, and we are now the fifth largest state in the nation. Pennsylvania's fourth.
Did we just lose them? I mean, did they just... Or
no,
did they actually go somewhere else?
Yeah, we know where they are.
Where did they land?
Some went to Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Some went to Michigan, some went to Ohio, some went to other places.
I know a couple of my friends that went to Indiana.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be funny if just a bunch of people were just standing right on the border?
Contemplating.
Yeah.
What are they just screwing with the census people?
Yeah.
One leg on either side?
Yeah.
I'm here. No,
you
I'm not.
Know.
I'm here.
You
no, I'm
know.
Not. Illinois is now the sixth largest state. We're not the fifth anymore. We're the sixth largest state. We have 12,741,080 people. Oops, 79. but 100,000 residents less since 2013, when the population was about 12.9 million. Why does this all matter? Well, it matters for federal tax dollars. It matters for any myriad of reasons. Obviously, business, revenue, things of that nature. Why are people leaving? It's taxes. It's government scandals. It's politics. And it's the future of the state.
Is there a way to balance that off? I mean, if we lost 4,500 or whatever.
45,000.
Do we know how many came in? Or are they just,
that's the net.
That's the population.
That's the net.
That would be babies
so,
being born.
We may have lost more. And
okay, if we've lost 45,000, then why is the traffic still so bad?
Oh my gosh, this morning was crazy.
You thought what traffic this morning was
bad? Yeah, what was going on the Eisenhower? It was really, really busy.
It wasn't an issue when we came in.
No.
Oh, I don't know. It's that 4 o'clock hour. All the nuts are out.
Well, you also have the construction, right? The overnight construction is not the deal, or no?
Well, yeah, but no, it was just really very busy for a pre-holiday week, I thought.
Got it. Item number two. Oh, a little crumpled paper's back.
Oh, that was good.
I like that. Attorney General Lisa Madigan says a preliminary report from her office shows allegations of sexual abuse against 500 more clergy members and priests in the state than previously known. 185 was the original number, and if they found 500 more, there's more than that. Madigan says the findings show the Catholic Church has failed survivors on a multitude of levels. The church archdiocese released a statement saying the nature of the report makes it difficult to discern which generalized findings apply to the Archdiocese of Chicago. No, I think I really think the statement needs to be, we are deeply, deeply saddened by this and desperately sorry to all of the people involved, and we are going to do whatever we can to make it right. Not, it wasn't me. It's outrageous. More than $100,000 in assistance has been given to the families of two 5th District police officers killed Monday in the line of duty, because Catholic Charities is a huge deal. And it should be in the city.
Yeah,
one of the largest Catholic cities in the country. But the Catholic Church needs to, again, take responsibility for this and fix it!
Yes. We're short of priests as it is right now.
Yeah, why do you think people are being driven from the church?
We have like a half a priest at my parish. It's ridiculous.
What do you mean, short?
Well, he's sharing another parish.
Oh,
so
that's not good.
It's terrible. We used to have two. Now we don't have any, really. And then we have half of one.
So on top of that, he's cheating?
Yeah.
Do you think in your lifetime, Mary, which of course would be my lifetime. No, you're going to live longer than I am. Who am I kidding? Do you think in our lifetime that there will be women ordained in the Catholic Church?
I hope so. They need to make women priests.
Absolutely.
And they need to make deacons as well.
I agree.
Need to do the services, because we have so many foreign priests, I hate to say that, some of them we cannot understand. We just can't understand what they're saying.
Yeah, it's
so
a relatability thing,
it's
sure.
Just a relatability thing, and the deacons need to do the homilies, and so we can understand and, you know, get something out of the masses.
Update it. Next. President Obama in town, delighted patients and staff at Washington, D.C. hospitals as well, wearing a Santa hat and carrying a big sack of gifts on Wednesday. That's a nice thing. Next. There appears to be no government shutdown coming on Capitol Hill as a temporary spending agreement was hashed out. I thought Mitch McConnell was still a hostage, but apparently he was at work yesterday. The GOP-controlled Congress on Wednesday severely undermined President Trump's drive for a border wall. The agreement was announced by Mitch McConnell, creep from Kentucky, to fund the government through February 8th. This has been going on for so long, and these are the type of things that should really aggravate us. We just check it off as another thing. I mean, you know, funded through February 8th, 6 weeks, the federal government. Oh, we're good. Check that off the list now until we need to have another political argument. Ridiculous. Next. We got ducks and paper. The only players under contract to the Cuban Federation are covered by a new agreement. The Cuban Federation agreed to release all players 25 and older with at least 6 years of professional experience. Once released, they'll be treated the same as other international players. Can be signed by the Major League Baseball clubs. Is this a big deal, Dave?
It is a big deal because there have been restrictions on Cuban players trying to make their way to the major leagues. They have had to endure all kinds of hardships to make it to the majors. You remember some of the stories involving Jose Abreu his journey to the major leagues. This agreement enables players to move from Cuba to the majors and then sign with a major league club. Here's the problem, though. If, in fact, relations between the United States and Cuba are the rollback, which has been threatened by the Trump administration, if those relations go back to the way they used to be, then this whole plan could end up
shut down.
Going nowhere. Yeah.
Next. Last one here. Toni Preckwinkle has dropped her challenge to Susana Mendoza's mayoral petitions, clearing the way for Mendoza to appear as a candidate on the February ballot. Preckwinkle, who claimed 14,000 signatures were not valid earlier Wednesday. Mendoza's campaign released a statement saying, based on the current status of the records exam, that count shows more than 13,000 valid signatures. The number puts Mendoza far above the 12,500 required. Again, this is your state comptroller. Well, she was for a couple of weeks. I get bogged down in one job. So we'll talk more about that in the Politics Hour. Pat Brady's here, and Eric Edelstein will join us later on as well. Nick, next. Let's talk to Nick DiGilio. You guys have Nick on the phone. Let's go there right now. Good morning, Nick. How are you?
All right. Morning.
Merry Christmas.
Same to you.
I don't know why I put a question mark on that. Merry Christmas.
What are you doing? I don't know yet. It's not till Tuesday, so maybe it might not be.
Oh, no. You'll have a delightful Christmas. I have nothing but faith. I've talked to the big man. What will you be doing? Spending time with your parents?
Absolutely. And we'll be going to a movie every Christmas. We'll have dinner at the house and exchange presents and hang out and usually talk to the cousins. And then we head off to see a movie. So we're going to see Holmes and Watson with John C. Reilly and Will Ferrell.
Can I go with you?
That's it. I may see you, Nick. I'm going there as well.
Doing Christmas Day?
That's what my wife and I, Jackie, do. We go to an open house and then we end up at a movie. There's hardly anybody there. Just Nick and his mom and dad.
That used to be our thing, too. You go to a Christmas Day movie, but then, you know, the kids grew up. So, Nick, if I could go with you, that'd be great.
Okay, we'll make room for you.
Okay.
But that's opening on Christmas, isn't it? And
it does opening on Christmas Day, yeah.
Because what says Christmas more than Holmes and Watson?
Right.
We got a lot of movies out now. Which one should we actually make an effort to see?
Well, I am a huge fan of Robert Zemeckis' new movie, Welcome to Marwen, with Steve Carell. And, you know, Patty and I got to interview Zemeckis. I got to meet him, and he's absolutely one of my heroes. So it was an incredible thrill. And we did the interview together, Patty and I, and it's podcast on the website right now at WGNRadio.com. You should listen to it. And I'm actually hosting a screening of Welcome to Marwen at the AMC Rosemont 18 this weekend at 7:10.
I've been told that it's a little tough to watch at times. True?
It is. I mean, it's based on a true story that started in tragedy. This is a real guy who was the victim of a hate crime and almost beaten to death. When he finally recovered, he had lost every memory he ever had. And just looking in his past and in books and stuff, apparently he was a brilliant illustrator, but this beating left him with no memory, left him, he couldn't write anymore. So he takes these dolls and these action figures and he creates this entire universe and takes pictures of it. And his pictures ended up in a gallery in New York, and his story is being told here while bringing those dolls in that world of Marwen to life with special effects and action scenes that Robert Zemeckis is so good at.
Wow.
I think it's a tremendous movie. I really do. I think it's great, and I hope everybody goes to see it. That's the one this weekend that I'm most excited about.
Nick, I don't think I'm giving anything away, but was it difficult at all to go back and forth between live action and when he's, you know, a doll?
It works for me. Okay. I mean, you know, I've read mixed reviews on this one. Quite frankly, I'm really surprised at some of the reviews for this movie, where they say that the fantastical elements with the dolls coming to life don't work in transition with the real world. And I think that's actually absolutely wrong. And if anybody can jump between fantasy and reality and using brilliant special effects, it's a guy like Robert Zemeckis, who has made his living doing that kind of stuff. You know, all the way back to Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And he never sacrifices any of the emotion of the story for the special effects of the action sequences. I cried at this movie. I was invested emotionally, and I thought it was funny and exciting, and the special effects were amazing. And it's a movie. It's really one of the reasons why I go to movies is because of things like this and because of guys like Robert Zemeckis.
So, Carell, interesting choice. He pulls it off.
Absolutely. Carell's had a great year, man. He was outstanding in Beautiful Boy, the movie with Timothy Chalamet, who he plays the father of Timothy Chalamet's character, who has a drug addiction and alcohol problem. Beautiful performance there. He's also Donald Rumsfeld in Vice, the movie that Adam McKay made about Dick Cheney, mm-hmm. which unfortunately is a terrible movie. I was very excited to see it. My hopes were really, really high, and man, is it disappointing.
Well, what's the number one problem with it?
The number one problem with it is that it is Adam McKay. The stuff that Adam McKay did in The Big Short that bothered me, mm-hmm. you know, some of the stylistic smart-alecky choices that he made, he does tenfold in this movie. It's a really preachy movie that I think Adam McKay thinks that he's making a movie for people who don't understand the world.
Didn't we get enough of that with W, the Oliver Stone version of this? I mean, you know.
Yeah. What this is like, I'm not kidding. This is like, you know, he tries to do that snarky attitude that he had in the big short by breaking the fourth wall and doing all that. He does it so much in this movie, but does it in such a way that is so pretentious and so heavy-handed that I got angry. Like 40 minutes into the movie, I watched the screener at home, but 40 minutes into the movie, I was on my couch and I was mad. I was like, Adam McKay, I'm not an idiot. You don't have to treat your audience like an idiot in order to make a political movie.
That's too bad. I was looking forward to it.
Well, the best thing in the movie is Sam Rockwell as W. He's by far the best thing in the movie, and he doesn't appear in the movie as often as he should.
Do you know the
biggest disappointment of the year?
Do you know the side story there with the fact that McKay had a heart attack while he was doing the movie? Adam McKay.
Are you serious? I didn't know that.
Yeah, Christian Bale plays Cheney. Cheney has had 5, 6, 10 heart attacks, whatever the number is. So in researching the role, Christian Bale finds out a number of things about heart attacks he didn't know before. So McKay on the set is complaining about stomach pains. And, you know, he's got a little tingling in his arm, but it's a little weird. And McKay goes, "You're having a heart attack." He goes, "What are you talking about? My stomach's upset." He goes, "You need to call someone." Calls 911, gets to the hospital. He had a heart attack. And if Bale hadn't done, and by the way, even if this isn't true, they're just selling the movie. It's a great story. Bale saved his life. Inadvertently saved his life. Or certainly saved severe damage to his heart because he got in early enough that he was able to, you know, have the treatment he needed.
Well, I mean, how unbelievably ironic is that he's making a movie about Dick Cheney and he has a heart attack? How does it?
Right.
I mean, you couldn't write that. And by the way, the heart attack stuff in the movie is played for laughs. So.
Well, the weird thing, too, is Bale is method, and he shot someone in the head, too, just like Cheney did. All right, Christmas Day, the Holmes and Watson thing opens. Anything else Christmas Day we need to be aware of?
No, not really. Bumblebee and Aquaman are the other two big ones that opened up for the holiday weekend, and those are both probably going to make a ton of money. The Bumblebee is like a Transformers prequel. And Aquaman is, you know, Aquaman, yet another another one of those movies, you know, the big comic book thing. So
Mary Poppins was yesterday, wasn't it?
Mary Poppins opened yesterday. Mary Poppins Returns. I'm not as crazy about it as everybody else is, but I'm sure that you know it'll get an audience without question, and it'll probably do very well.
All right, so plug the movie club.
Well, the next movie club, by the way, is Saturday night. I'm hosting a special screening of Welcome to Marwen. It's the 7:10 screening. If you go to amctheaters.com, it's at the AMC Rosemont 18. And it's a special. We've never done a screening of a movie that's out right now. We're doing this because of our connection with Robert Zemeckis this past year. And then the official one is Tuesday, January 8th, and it's Slapshot, one of the greatest movies ever made, one of the funniest movies ever made, and definitely the best hockey movie ever made. And that's January 8th, 8 p.m., AMC Rosemont 18, amctheaters.com. For tickets, $10. Parking is free.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
Thank you.
And again, Merry Christmas to everybody. Your family, say hi and all that.
Thank you. I will do that. And same to you and everybody there and your family.
6:32. Chuck Todd joins us coming up. 7:20 WGN.
Welcome to Sunday.
Wait a second.
What day is it? The date.
12 May. Thursday.
What year?
Wait, what?
Hello, you there, boy.
Me, sir.
Yes, you, my good fella. What day is today?
Today?
From NBC News in Washington, the longest-running show in television history. This is Meet the Press with Chuck Todd.
Ah, just get your heart pumping, right? Chuck, do you have, like, weird sort of flashbacks, and do you think it's Sunday morning when you hear that?
You know, if I hear the theme music, I do. You just sort of get, I have my own sort of, you know, I get my own little stress levels up a little bit.
right.
You know, Dennis Haysbert, you know, he's going to start bugging WGN for some royalties there.
You know, Allstate is
just warning you.
Allstate's just up the street, so Haysbert is around here occasionally. So it's a fair warning from you. All right, let me start with what I think is the obvious. The president says we're leaving Syria in 30 days. What happened if we don't let the enemy know what we're doing?
Yeah, and I have to say, I don't mean to be suspicious of the timing, but I'm extraordinarily suspicious of this timing. I'm glad to see he made this decision just in time for Vladimir Putin's yearly press conference.
Today.
Today. I mean, just, The timing comes a few days after he's on the phone call with the Turkish president, Erdogan, who himself has warned that he's about to order his troops to go after the Kurds in northern Syria. He views them as a threat. Obviously, the Kurds and the Turks, that is an uneasy situation for the United States, who are allies with both. The Kurds have been probably the most important ally to the United States when going back to the Iraq War. And if they get slaughtered because we've abandoned them, that is the price of that is going to be pretty high in the long term in the Middle East. But the timing of this, it's just odd. Nobody seemed to know. It was as if he had to deliver this before the end of the year in some form. It's just odd. All right, and I hope Congress. I bet you Congress will look into the timing of this decision, not just the substance of it.
Well, there is a time delay, wag the dog aspect to this, which seems beyond obvious, and you just laid it out well. So what sort of power does Congress have to stop it?
They don't have a lot of power to stop this other than what you're seeing, rhetorical complaints. Obviously, this is, I think, you know, it's possible they could... they could demand something in some form in legislation, but you know, sending troops into Syria is not very popular either, right?
Sure.
So this isn't something that Democrats are going to feel. You know, Democrats are pretty divided on this too. So, you know, I think this is a situation where the president's going to be able to quote unquote make this happen. He's going to get what he wants here, but the consequences. I think for his own party coalition, and look, he's never been on the same side on foreign policy as the Lindsey Grahams and the Marco Rubios. He made that clear during the campaign, something he's brought up on Twitter this morning. And I don't think we should underestimate his comfort, with abiding by, with this, but I don't know if Congress can do much other than scream loudly. But the timing of this is something else that they can investigate.
And the problem with it in the big picture is, does it ignite a fire to allow ISIS to reestablish the home office in Syria in the same way they had in Iraq?
in Iraq, I mean, look, the fact of the matter is, and we don't like to say it, we are the world's policemen.
Right.
Okay? We took on that role in World War II. Frankly, we took on that role when we decided to enter World War I. We are the world's policemen. We don't like it. It seems unfair. But the fact of the matter is, when we leave a situation, it's like pulling the pot off a boiling, you know, off of boiling water. Right? There's nothing to keep it in the pot now. Mm-hmm. And you know, America is the lid. And if the lid is gone, we don't know what fills the vacuum. All we know is we ain't going to like it.
Michael Flynn is going to have another 90 days to think about it before sentencing. Did this surprise you this week, like everybody seemed to be surprised?
It did. And this is another one where we have these like odd mysteries. Why the president has not turned on Flynn the way he's turned on
right.
Cohen. Why the president never turned on Papadopoulos the way he turned on Cohen. Why the president didn't turn on Manafort the way he turned on Cohen. All three of those people I mentioned had some form of a cooperation agreement with Mueller. And the president didn't turn on them. But all three of those other gentlemen that I brought up all seem to help facilitate the president's campaign against the FBI. Papadopoulos, you know, they would say, you know, Manafort would cooperate with Mueller or Flynn would cooperate with Mueller. But they did help advance the storyline that somehow the FBI's tactics were abusive. We've seen a report that Manafort supposedly advised the president to go after the FBI, undermine the FBI. It'll undermine the whole investigation. And for some, Flynn's filing, for some reason, while very cooperative with Mueller, went and took shots at the FBI, which clearly is something to please the president. So, again, I hate being so conspiratorial sounding on all of this. But you sit here and it's and you're like, what is going on? And you have to identify, okay, what is it that could be something that the president is happy about? And Flynn going after the FBI in his court filing made him happy. But I think this judge basically had enough, just enough. And really, I think pushed back in a way that the president's allies didn't see coming.
So there's an argument this week, which seems to be completely appropriate by form of a question. If you can't run a foundation, how do you run the country? The Trump Foundation shut down by the New York AG. And Trump goes, yeah, whatever. It's what I wanted anyway. This just goes on the pile, the Trumpster dumpster fire of all the things that in any other parallel universe would be impeachable offenses. But this is barely getting a blip.
Well, part of it is, I think, the amount of I guess, call it scandal. Every single organization that the president has run or started is under investigation, right? The foundation, his business,
mm-hmm.
his campaign, the inaugural committee, now parts of the government. I mean, it is there is nothing he's – I don't think they've investigated Woolman Rink yet, the ice rink in Central Park that he helped fund. That might be the only thing they haven't started an investigation on, and I'm not saying that won't happen. Every single organization that he's run seems to have questionable finances, seems to have questionable ways it pays taxes, seems to have questionable ways it distributes funds. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket science here to say, I think I see a pattern.
And my favorite topic, again, and favorite, of course, being the cynical form of the word, is the fact that Mitch mm-hmm. McConnell has laryngitis and he can't speak. The president of the United States, of his party, but the president of the United mm-hmm. States is clearly in quicksand here. There is no downside post-election to Mitch McConnell standing up and saying, of course we're concerned. We want to let the Mueller investigation run its course, but we're deeply concerned, and we want this to be cleared up, but we're looking into it as well. Why couldn't he say that?
I think he's trying to preserve a couple things. Number one, I think he actually does believe it's unconstitutional, for what it's worth. I mean, I take him, he is somebody that pays attention, doesn't like to see a congressional action overturned. And the argument that the Mueller protection bill is unconstitutional is a pretty strong one, right? Separation of powers. There are a lot of folks that make the argument, well, let's test it. That's why we have a third branch of government.
Right.
Let them figure this out. But I think the other part of this is McConnell wants to preserve some relationship with the president. And if he, and I think then in that sense, And in his mind, preserving a relationship with the president is simply so that he can get what he wants done. I think that's what he's doing here. I think if he, I don't think he cares that much about the Mueller bill as much as he cares about it getting, in his mind, getting in the way of other things he wants to get done with the president.
And Paul Ryan did his farewell speech yesterday. Talk about not getting a blip. He had some members, quite a few members, show up to hear it. But how's history going to remember him?
Well, I think yesterday was a eulogy for one part of the party, of his wing of the Republican Party. I think he'll. I think history will basically say, you know, it's not quite he's the head of the Whigs, but in some ways his wing of the party is going the way of the Whigs. So, I think there's a second act for Paul Ryan, but I think it's a decade away. He's young enough where he can have a second act in a decade or so.
Right.
But I think this Republican Party is not one for him. And frankly, I think he needs to harden up. I think what we found out about him is that he was miscast. He's not a political animal. And if you're not a political animal, you can't be an effective Speaker of the House.
Yeah, and I would argue, too, that history is going to remember him as somebody that never should have taken the job and trust his instincts for never taking the job. And if he did take the job, he had to do the job, and he didn't do the job to the level it needed to be done. I'll get Pat Brady in here before we run out of time. Pat, say hi to Chuck.
Hey, Chuck, how you doing?
I'm good.
Hey, me and the other 9 Whigs here left in Cook County. We're having the same discussion on the looking forward to 2020 with the president and the Senate and looking at the potential massive train wreck. Have we reached a tipping point with Trump politically with all these scandals?
I don't know. You know, it's funny. I think we have, or I think we're about to. I mean, you're starting to see, you look at our last NBC Wall Street Journal poll, and you know, it's over 60% of the country doesn't think the president's been honest about everything with Russia. The core believers of Trump are at 34%. You can see that number in all of our polls, in various ways in our polls. 34% don't approve of the Mueller investigation. 34% don't believe the midterms sent a message. Or, you know, so we do know it's 34, and I would argue that's a little bit lower than it was a year ago, right? What is the core Trump base? And it sits at 34. Look, I think you have a lot of nervous Republicans in Capitol Hill who look at the economy in a year and are nervous, who look at the situation in the Middle East and are nervous, and who look at these investigations and are nervous and think that all three in different ways are things that could drag down the whole coalition. So I the lawmakers are more nervous, but right now they just keep that, they're still keeping that to themselves, I think, a little bit. But I mean, Pat, you know it. I think you hear the same thing. I think it's the economy that in the next 6 months that really is petrifying most Republicans I talk to.
I think, too, here the donor class is fed up.
Well, you know this because you've been out there.
Well,
you know,
and they get, speaking of people that could see the economy impact first.
Yeah.
Right? They're the canaries in the coal mine. But you know, he hasn't needed a wide swath of donors. He didn't need them in 2016. It is a small group of dedicated donors that have kept him afloat.
He needs the senators who need the donors, and if the fat cats aren't writing checks anymore, then the senator support maybe goes away?
So far, that's right. But so far, the Trump skeptical donors have still given money to Senate Republicans and House Republicans, right, Pat? They've not yet withheld their money from the Pat Toomeys of the world or things like that.
Right, okay.
Yeah, ironically, Chuck, that Whig meeting was about 10 feet from where Abraham Lincoln won his nomination.
How about that? How about that?
Hey, political parties evolve, right?
Yes.
Happy holidays, my friend. I know you
Thank
know
you
this,
guys.
But let me just say it again publicly, how much I appreciate your information, your support, your time every week, and I hope you and your family have a great time off.
Well, I appreciate it. Congratulations to your Chicago Bears. And, you know, pretty good. I will say it. I will admit it. And
you're a bigger man than
Packers,
the quarterback.
The Packers will have a new coach next year, and I'll be happy about that.
Well, okay, I appreciate it. Wow, that was very
good. Enjoy your 1 year
accomplishment. Don't ruin it because it was a very nice thing you did. All right, happy Friday, man. Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
See you later. That's Chuck Todd, Packers fan.
Through gritted teeth.
Yeah. It was a nice thing.
Yeah,
nice
sure.
Thing you said.
Absolutely.
That's why I cut him off at the end before he stomped on it. 6:56, what's coming up? We're at that point in the year where everybody is taking random vacations and days and all that before the end of the year. So Sandberg's gone today and tomorrow. We're all gone next week, I think. Oh, you're here next week?
I'll be here a few days next week.
Mary Vandeveld, will you be here next week?
No, I'm gone next week.
Okay, so I guess we know who's dedicated.
Dave.
I don't know. Is Justin in next week?
No.
I don't know.
No.
Okay, so Justin Kaufman, no. Pete, no. Anyway, the point being, David Miranda and Sammy, the last name unknown.
Martino.
Thank you. Are both here handling the production. Thank you guys for doing that. And we will continue with another exciting hour. But this time, Pat Brady will be here, so this could crash and burn like nobody's business. And I'll reveal what he got me for Christmas.
Yeah, how are you going to reveal that?
I'm going to wear it.
Oh, nice.
We'll come back with the news next at 720 WGN from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Listen to Pat Brady.
You know, when your kids are home for the holiday, maybe they're going out clubbing. This is a big dance hit at the clubs. Keep it up. Keep it up. Crank it up.
I had Speedos on when I did that line.
Let it roll. I'd like to thank Luther Vandross for coming back from the dead to help with this.
Now, he used to be the acting chairman of the GOP P-A-R-T-I-L. GOP party. A federal prosecutor that we need to give our utmost respect. Respect the man, respect the man. I just tuned right in on the Cochran Show today to hear what he is saying.
What is he saying?
You never know about something that he said will keep your vote from swaying.
Keep it from swaying, baby.
The analyst with info that you need to know, and you can get it here on 720. Oh, oh, oh. I was never gonna look at politics as simply
for the
black
full
and
album
white.
Cut, the Grateful Dead length.
I had so much fun doing that one.
It's very
a dead time to film a holiday.
Sorry.
That's musical director.
Thank you for playing the longer version.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Pat Brady is here. How are you, man?
Great. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you and your wonderful family.
And to yours. All the kids home?
Everybody's home. House is messy. Smells like stale beer. It's all good.
Wait, is that your contribution or theirs?
No, I know. It used to be. Now it's just the college age kids.
All right, let's jump in here. You were here when we were talking to Chuck Todd a little while ago. Pick one. What's the biggest story of the week?
The biggest story of the week is probably the Syria. Pulling out of Syria.
And it doesn't resonate with people because we have been, and we've talked about this many times, but we've been in a position for a long time where none of us have had to suffer the consequences of the wars we've been fighting.
Yeah, it was interesting, though, yesterday.
And by the way, when I say none of us, I mean none of us who don't have somebody we love who is actively serving.
Well, the reaction yesterday, though, and the one that was really kind of leading the charge was our Congressman, Adam Kinzinger.
Mm-hmm.
And when President Trump did the video and pointed to the sky at our people that have passed in the defense of this country and said that this is what they want, I can imagine the Gold Star family wasn't too happy that he used them as a political prop, and that's the point that Congressman Kinzinger was making beyond the substance of the decisions to pull out without talking to anybody. But
do you agree or disagree with my analogy that this is a slow-motion wag the dog?
I agree, but I think really the circle, the noose is getting a lot tighter around the president with all his investigations, and now he's losing support within Congress. Even remember what I think with Nixon, people still supported him up till right before they voted for the articles of impeachment. But this guy's a disaster. He's a disaster for the Republican Party. And I can sympathize with Paul Ryan and Chuck's comments on, you know, we're going the way of the Whigs. A lot of us just don't want to identify with anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you need dental records to identify the Republican Party, the party of fiscal responsibility, the party of less government, the party of
free traders.
Yeah, exactly. And
national security. And Chuck made the point, we don't want to be the world's policemen, but we are. And to pull out.
And you don't get to just say we're not anymore.
Right.
I mean, it's 70 years of history. You don't get to just say, okay, I'm unwinding all of it.
Well, Congressman Kinzinger last night made a good point that the president's been playing a lot of golf with Rand Paul,
mm-hmm.
who's probably the only person in Congress that agrees that this is really good, either the way he did it or the act in and of itself. So it's disturbing. But again, I hate to be gloom and doom on Republicans, but I don't know where we go because 20's not going to be, Eric just walked in, 2020's not going to be any better.
And that's why the comments you made at the end with Chuck Todd about donor dollars, I think, are going to become more and more important as we go along. Give me the short version answer to this from your prosecutor side. The decision on Michael Flynn to take that pause the judge was clearly offering and not get a sentence for another 90 days. First off, why 90 days? Why does it have to take that long?
Well, that's arbitrary. I don't really know what that means. But having been there before in that prosecutor role, it happened to me once where a judge went nuts and started screaming at me on a plea deal. And I said, Judge, we'll just come back in a week or so when you calm down.
Right.
But here's the way this works. There's the defense and the prosecution kind of work out with the sentencing range they want. In this case, it was 0 to 6 months. But it's still up to the judge to determine what the sentence is going to be. And it's up to the prosecutor to determine what to charge. Here, I think the defense made a mistake, and I think Chuck's analysis was right. I think they were speaking to the president when they went after the FBI in their statement of why General Flynn doesn't deserve to go to jail, and I think it really irritated him. They should have just...
So is it that simple? Everybody's going nuts over what really happened. Is it that simple that the judge is completely irritated by the response, and therefore, instead of putting him in jail the other day, he's saying, you now have an opportunity to cooperate more over the next 90 days and give us everything you know, because if you don't, you're going to jail?
Like, he tipped his hand. I do think that. But it's not it doesn't happen... I shouldn't say it's not unusual. It doesn't happen frequently that a judge goes nuts like that, but I've seen it happen. Like I said, it happened to me. They just don't agree with either what the prosecution has done. They think that there may be more there, but that's really not the judge's determination. That's up to the prosecutor.
We'll come back with Eric Edelstein as well to talk about a number of things, including something he knows a little something about. Susana Mendoza's signatures are fine, and Tony Preckwinkle had to say they were fine. So the race is on. So we'll get some details on that as well. Back on the show, on the Steve Cochran Show. You can play some music if you want. David Miranda sitting in for Super Joe. And young Sammy. What's his last name? Barbarino?
Martino.
Sammy Martino. Sammy Martino filling in for Pete and Mary. So he's got double duty.
Can I tell you what a good job this guy's doing?
Hi, Eric Edelstein.
Hi. So every week I come here, there's four doors. It's like whack-a-mole to guess which door the producer's going to come out to get you. I always guess wrong. This kid, boom, right where I was standing.
Well, don't steal him. I know what you think. We could use him at my company. I know what you're thinking. You go, we need a new door guy at AL Media. Let's get a couple of plugs in here. AL Media is what?
We are a media and political strategy firm that does electoral politics all over the country.
All right. And the Democrats.
Democrats, yes.
And on the Republican side, Pat Brady. Got a compliment again on you kids last night. They said, you know what we really like about Pat and Eric? And I said, I don't really care. No, I said... what I really like about Pat and Eric is they have discussions from different sides, and they don't yell at each other. So that's one of the reasons that I think the audience has responded so well to both of you.
Thank you.
And Pat, how about a plug for you?
You know, I'm going to plug Tuskegee Next, the program I'm involved in. We're training at-risk, but real smart kids to learn how to fly. We have 27 kids in the last 4 years that all moved on to careers in aviation.
It's tremendous. It's just a great organization.
TuskegeeNext.org. Steve Avis chairs the DuPage Airport Authority, but it's a good thing to contribute to, and it's been a lot of fun.
One other plug, Dave Bennett. John DeCoste is monitoring the phones like a PBS pledge drive as people call and ask questions about how they can get tickets for New Year's Eve. We'll have Rocky Laporte, Fall Down Funny, John DeCoste, extremely funny. I noticed I cut him once.
Is that a categories?
Tim Benker, occasionally funny. Steve Cochran, these are the
Dean
people
Richards?
That'll be on the show. And Dean Richards.
Dean Richards, yeah.
Rarely funny. But we'll all be on stage at the Tivoli for New Year's Eve for people that can't stay awake until midnight. And tickets are available where?
Eventbrite.com, B-R-I-T-E, Eventbrite.
And thanks to American Weathermakers sponsoring the program.
Hey, Steve, what's the batting order on that in case we just want to see one?
You mean just go pop in, pop out?
Yeah, I like DeCoste. I'd like to see John.
I can guarantee you Rocky Laporte will close. Rocky Laporte will be the final. And then at the end, we take a balloon, one single balloon, and drop it off stage because we can't afford to do the whole Times Square thing. Hey, I saw your brother's show again.
Yeah.
I feel bad.
Uh-huh.
And I know they're making decisions on stay or go. How's he looking?
You know, they're sort of in between. The ratings have been middling, but these days on broadcast television, given all the time shifters and all that, middling's pretty good.
And so, tell everybody who your brother is.
My brother's Paul Edelstein. He's an actor on an NBC sitcom that you're referencing called I Feel Bad.
That's very funny.
Hey, what else? I was half asleep and I saw his name pop up on the credits. What else is he... producing.
Well, he was executive producing a show called The Imposters that was on Bravo and writing it. He was in some episodes. He's done a lot of directing, a lot of guest appearances on lots of shows. So.
Okay.
Yeah, you just, you know, it's a fraction of 0.1% that has the jobs that last 5 years, 7 years. You got to be a hired hitman or hitwoman.
He's done great. He's been out there 15 years, been a working actor, been successful. Steadily. So it's terrific. More credit to him.
Is he, would I like him better than you if I get
much,
to know?
Much, much. He's funnier. He's nicer. He's
we
got to
go out there and, can you get us on The Price is Right?
No. That's not how it works.
Oh.
Everybody in L.A. doesn't actually know everybody in L.A. All right, it's 7:29. I want to say hi to our most valuable person on the planet, or the planet. I mean, if you can't find a planet. And it's Ward Miller. Ward Miller joins us this morning, and happy holidays to you, Ward.
Oh, happy holidays to you. Thanks for having us on this morning.
Appreciate it. Tell everybody.
Honored. We're honored. Well, most valuable organization and person.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a big day. Tell everybody what Preservation Chicago is.
So we're a nonprofit preservation advocacy group. So we advocate for historic buildings across the city of Chicago. So you'll see us testifying for historic buildings before the Commission on Chicago Landmarks and making statements before the Plan Commission at City Hall, as well as working with neighborhood groups to identify and preserve historic buildings throughout the city.
Are we good or bad at doing that at this point? You know, regardless of what you guys do, how would you grade the city?
You know what? We're doing all right. So there are areas like the Loop where there's a lot of amazing restorations going on of important buildings. But we're seeing more and more of a demand in neighborhoods where it used to be just the opposite. You know, we used to see historic buildings be torn down for, you know, taller and taller buildings. And now it seems like that's happening in neighborhoods, both in residential areas as well as commercial areas of these neighborhoods. So that's really become a real focus of ours recently.
But the key is for the public to get involved, and you're giving them an opportunity to nominate a building for preservation. How do they do that?
So every year we have the Chicago 7 Most Endangered Buildings announcement at the end of February. This year it's February 27th, and we're asking for the public to send in nominations, a building or a special place or landscape or feature of your neighborhood that you feel may be endangered. That could be demolition by neglect. It could be a building that maybe is not endangered but is suspiciously mothballed, if you will, boarded up, or just doesn't seem to be going anywhere, or maybe a building that you know is actually got a demolition permit, or you feel is being sort of neglected, or something you feel may be threatened in the future. So we're asking the public to submit those nominations into the hopper, if you will. And you can do that by going to www.preservationchicago.org or at info@preservationchicago.org, or even send us a nomination by mail at our address, 4410 North Ravenswood Avenue in Chicago, 60640.
Well, I appreciate the work you're doing and everybody there, and I hope you have a great holiday. I hope you already have had, but I hope it continues, and certainly thanks for what you're doing for the city. But you don't get to be the most valuable person on the planet, you know, without doing good stuff. So it's obviously an award well deserved.
There you go. Well, thank you so much. We're honored to be part of your program this morning.
Thank you, Ward. Thanks for being on the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
I like digging holes and hiding things inside them. When I grow old, I hope I won't forget.
All right, 7:41 now. Pat Brady's here. Eric Edelstein's here talking some politics. You know what I'm going to do? And I'm going to regret this. I'm going to take a couple of phone calls for you guys. 312-981-7200. We'll do that at the top of the hour.
We're to Costco.
No, he won't be calling. He won't be one of them. Eric, you are working with, amongst other clients, Susana Mendoza. What's the status of your challenge signatures?
Well, it's interesting. From the beginning of the challenge, we knew she'd be on the ballot. It was pretty much a frivolous challenge, one of those kind of things that the machine, big party bosses try to do. Yesterday, in the binder check, without going into the minutia, Mendoza had gone over the necessary amount. In other words, the objections that Preckwinkle had challenged only halfway through the search, had already given her enough. So we put out a statement that basically said this thing's over and Preckwinkle's wasting taxpayer money by continuing. And a couple hours later, she basically conceded it. And look,
it's kind of a nasty concession, though.
Yeah, I mean, she conceded and then she proceeded to say how her, you know, how bad she was. But I think that I know there's a lot of rhetoric and people challenged and Obama challenged and all that, and it is part of the process. I do think it's a little different when someone like Preckwinkle challenges all these women of color and all that. But putting aside the sort of good or bad of challenges, I think politically it's really dangerous to challenge someone when you don't get them.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't knock them off, you make them stronger. And because it's that human reaction to somebody went after you. They obviously fear you. They obviously don't want you on the ballot. And you knock them off, great. You know, then you got an advantage. But if you don't, it's sort of like you know the standing up to the bully and winning. Now you've made the other candidate stronger.
Especially separate from her Madigan. Narrative too. That's her whole thing, is kind of standing up to the machine.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Separate from Madigan, how often are challenges successful?
You know, they're more often than not successful.
Okay. And we just don't hear about it.
We don't hear about it. We hear about the ones that are.
And if you get to the end of the court system, too, the law kind of presumes the validity.
Yeah,
it's kind of an uphill climb.
And look, we should, look, you want to do away with fraud. You want to do away with things that are against the law. But you also want to lean on the side of ballot access. You want to give voters the choice. And I think it is ironic, someone like a Preckwinkle, who is a woman of color, obviously she's historic as the first woman African-American president of the county board, who acts like a progressive, but she behaves like this sort of party boss in the old rules, and using a lot of the rules that were used to keep women, to keep people of color, to keep outsiders out of the system. Again, I understand hard-nosed politics. I understand giving yourself an advantage. But message-wise, I think it's not a good message for her.
You know what else? In the political world, too, the message that I believed and was told by people that I trust, that there's no way Mendoza's getting
away. I know.
They were very effective, the Preckwinkle campaign, of having people that are credible go out and tell everybody. And I'm guessing that the reason they did that not only is to create the buzz, but it would hurt your candidate's funding.
Yeah, and it really hasn't. It's interesting. I mean, it's raised her profile. I mean, she had a high profile before, but you had all these people saying, why are they picking on you? Why are they afraid of you? You know, what are they scared of? And, you know, Mendoza, as you said, sort of has that profile of a fighter and someone who isn't scared.
What qualifies her for the job?
Well, I believe having
here goes our nice moment, Eric. It's going right away.
Yeah, here we go, Steve. Look, well,
my job is to ask questions.
Absolutely,
that
I'm happy to answer. Look, she guided the state through the worst fiscal crisis ever, whichever side you're on. The fact is, she took office and the unpaid bills was at $14 billion. A year later, it's half of that. She was able to pass in a highly polarized moment a Transparency Act and a bond deal that really helped the state do this. She was the city clerk. I think she's got the ideas. I think she's got the experience, and more importantly, I think she's got a vision for the future.
She's tough enough to handle the alderman.
Oh, I don't think there's any question. No, I would never question Mendoza's toughness. She grew up in a world.
Yeah, not because she's female, just because the aldermen are nuts.
Not, of course, the aldermen can be nuts.
Yes.
But, you know, she's somebody who's always been underestimated in a lot of ways, and she's always overcome a lot of odds. And I think, you know, a lot of people talked about that ad we made in the comptroller's race about her being a soccer star. And, you know, I think particularly when you're a young woman and you grow up in a man's world, she played soccer against boys. She played on boys' all-star teams. And
yeah, you're making a larger point.
I mean, I don't mean to be cliche, but, like, she's understood being a girl in a man's world and done really well doing it.
What will stop in this mayor's race folks from going in? Well, let me back this up for a second. Bill Daley has somewhere around $10 million. Is the number I've heard. $10 million to spend in 6 weeks. We're going to see a lot of Bill Daley.
You're going to see a lot.
I don't know how much Mendoza has. I don't know how much Preckwinkle has. What will stop folks from going, well, that's a name I recognize. I generally have good memories of both Daleys.
Yeah.
And just clicking on Daley.
Well, it's a double-edged sword. I think there is some of that, and it's deserved. Families made great sacrifice to this city and served it a long time. But there's a negative side to it. And I think there's a feeling that, you know, perhaps we don't want to go back to the Daley days, that we need to move forward. And whether that's fair to Bill or unfair, he's his own person and all that.
Is it tough to campaign against that name?
it depends where you're campaigning. I think there is a lot of feeling of respect for the name, but it's time to move on and do something different. Let's not go back to the past. Let's not go back to the status quo. And I think there's a feeling that because he's Bill Daley, you're sort of going backwards rather than moving the city forward.
Millennials going to vote?
I think so. I mean, if the 2018 turnout is any indication, we had much more young participation. I think you will in this election as well. And, you know, again, we say it all the time on this show, Steve. A funny thing happens when the voters get involved. I would take every poll. There's a great poll out for Mendoza today that says it's she and Preckwinkle likely to be in the runoff and that she wins in a two-way. But I would take every poll with a grain of salt. Any poll that you see come out between now and the election, I would take with a grain of salt. I think you're going to have a high turnout in this election. I think people are going to want some energy and future-oriented look. And look, this is the first really open, contested mayor's race in, I don't know, Pat, a generation.
Yeah,
I mean, Rahm kind of locked the thing up early. It was never really close when Daley left. And Daley was there for 20 years.
Basically, right?
So maybe, yeah, 83. So it's an exciting moment for the city of Chicago. I don't care what age you are, what generation, or who your candidate is to have an say in who the next mayor is.
Yeah.
And Steve, you know, to your points, come on out and, you know, yes, I'm from Mendoza. I think she'd be terrific for the city. Others have other views. Come out and fight for your candidate and vote and participate.
Yeah, make America vote again, the Chicago version.
Exactly. We were just talking in the break about the national and international interest the Chicago mayor race gets.
Yeah.
It's really remarkable.
It's a world city.
It is remarkable. It really is.
It's a world city. You are the honorary mayor of Springfield. You spend time there, so we don't have to. what happens between now and swearing in of Preckwinkle and Preckwinkle of the governor? And everyone else is assuming office.
I think a lot of it is the transition. I got to give them credit. It seems to be going very, very well. They put a lot of diversity, a lot of different people on the transition committees. The people I talk to on both sides of the aisle think that there's going to be a pretty aggressive agenda that he'll be able to get through because of the makeup of the House and the Senate. And I think the Republicans, where they can, will work with them to get things done. It might include infrastructure. Might legalize marijuana. Might be a gaming bill. A lot of things that I think are going to get done. So it's going to be a very exciting 4 months. I think he's going to hit the ground running. I got to give him credit. They've really done a nice job.
I'm a big fan, as you know, of Mr. Durkin. Are the Republicans willing to work with the Democrats?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and Jim's the perfect guy to do it. I think he's respected on both sides. He's not going to compromise the principles that Republicans stand for. I think
that's the president's job.
Yeah, well, you know, we're going to have the progressive income tax and right. Some of the things that the Democrats want. I don't think they're going to get Republican support for. And the reality is, the speaker's not going to let a progressive income tax go through without Republican votes. Point is, Durkin's the kind of guy, and Ben Bill Brady, that I think he can work with and get things done and get the state moving forward. I went to an event Monday, and a good point was made by the speaker that since 2003, there's been a civil war down there, even amongst Democrats, with the speaker and Blagojevich and with the governor Rauner and the Democrats, and people are just fed up with it. And I think they realize it's time to get something done.
2019, is Speaker Madigan going to come on this show?
What are you asking me for?
What's the over-under?
To Pat's point, I do think we're in a moment in Springfield and across the country. I think you saw it in Washington with the criminal justice reform bill.
Yeah, it's great.
Voters want something done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes, there's people in their corners and it's tribal, but this still is a pendulum nation where people and voters say, stop fighting, get something done, do something.
Fortunately for you, I only have a short time for you to answer this. What's this Rauner story about? He wanted somebody else to run.
I know. Conventional wisdom was about 3 days before the election that if he actually did win, he was going to demand a recount. So maybe.
I don't understand. Listen, Governor Rauner was on the show a million times, and all the Democrats were offered the same sort of access. I always gave him credit, and I think rightfully so, for coming in and answering questions and all that. I had a sense at different times his heart wasn't in it. But first off, he didn't have the power to replace himself if he found somebody, did he?
No, that's up to the state central committee, the party. You can't just do it that way. I mean, we're not Democrats. We don't operate like they do. It's not a dictator. I'm just kidding.
They should have put Brady on the ticket. Would have done better.
He would have done.
I know.
I'm headed by both parties.
But here's the thing I don't understand. If I spend $80 million or $100 million, I feel like I probably want the gig. I don't get how those two jive. He didn't want it, and he spent all that money?
Well, in his defense, he said he wanted it, and he worked hard for it. And there's some articles today saying he just wanted to put the best person in that could actually win.
And that wasn't him?
Well, I'm not saying I agree with his argument, but that's the argument that he had baggage with the conservative part of the Republican Party and a lot of baggage otherwise. But listen, I give him credit for doing what he did. He tried to do some things that didn't work out. He put a lot of money. He got a lot of energy in the Republican Party, but we are in a bad spot right now. We got to figure out going forward if this we can resurrect the party. And the solutions I'm hearing from some of the people that we need to go further to the right and get more socially conservative.
It's idiotic.
Is idiotic.
Have either one of you seen a candidate do that? And what's your gut reaction if that's a private meeting?
To leave the ticket?
To say we should find somebody else.
It's a guaranteed loss for that party because it's a resentment on the behalf of voters who say there's something going on, there's a game being played, there's an insider, something we're not privy to. Where's our say in this? We nominated this person. Voters hate that.
And yeah, I mean, how can I support you if you don't support yourself?
Well, how can is you know? And I put myself out there for the governor.
You sure did, absolutely. Yeah,
but I watched that interview, and I know Craig Wall's a great guy. It was a square up question, and I go, "What?"
It's a strange. It's a very strange.
It's a mistake,
answer.
And I listen. People make mistakes when they do interviews, but a lot of us were scratching our heads.
We'll come back, and phone calls or text messages
can
are
we talk
both
about
welcome.
Your gift too,
and we will explain what Pat gave me. Listen, I'll hold it up right now. You want to explain why you did this?
Well, to your credit, as everyone knows, it's tough to lose weight. It takes a lot of discipline and changing lifestyle.
Absolutely.
You've had a great year. You've lost a ton of weight. You look
Marine.
Great. So I was thinking, you know, when you have a body like Steve does now, you want to show it off. Don't you think, Dave Bennett?
Absolutely.
You worship at the temple. If you have a body like a temple, now my body's mostly been a Buddhist temple, but if you have a temple.
This inspired me by all the long runs I've done up and down Lake Michigan, the guys at Steve's age run speedos.
Right.
So I got Steve a nice Speedo over at the East Bank Club.
And this is a shock. I know a lot of people don't know this. Never had a Speedo before.
And the young woman that I bought that from said, you cannot return that. You cannot return swimwear. So
yeah, I don't return anything.
So Merry Christmas, Steve. You're like, thank you for everything you've done for me. You're like the older brother I never wanted.
Yeah, well, amen. We'll come back in a moment. Back on the Steve Cochran Show at 7:56. The good news for you guys is the caller said, please take the text messages instead. I don't want to talk to either one of them. Eric Edelstein's here and Pat Brady's here. Oh, and I didn't ask you about Lincoln Forum, too, while I look through these texts.
Oh, we're trying to line up a mayor debate, and then we're going to have a big panel on marijuana. Legalization of marijuana. No.
Will there be samples?
It might be legal. Who knows?
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's see. 773. Put a salary cap on the politicians and give the extra millions to veterans or the homeless. You know, I've heard this idea before, and it's you cap the amount you can spend and you level the playing field. Is that ever going to happen?
I don't think so. Not with the Supreme Court as it currently exists and precedent.
Good idea, though.
But it is a good. I mean, look at what was spent in the governor's race. I mean, almost $300 million. I mean, how much good could that do in lots of places instead of, you know, just going for television ads?
Texter 773. Very little, if anything, stands out with Mendoza, Daley, and Preckwinkle. Why does it seem Paul Vallis doesn't connect or stand a chance? Either one of you guys.
You know, I think that Vallis is a smart guy, but he comes off a little bit of that, like, get off my lawn kind of cranky guy who just talks and doesn't really listen and just has an answer for everything and an excuse for everything. But I think there's a common touch in politics where you got to be someone that people feel like they can connect to, and I think Vallis lacks that.
Question for Pat from the 312. What do you say to the criticism that Republicans as a party lack empathy for the less fortunate?
Well, there's something to that when you hear some of the rhetoric out of the White House when the president, the way he described the immigrant community in this country during his campaign. So I don't think that's accurate with what people truly believe, but I understand why people might get that impression.
Interesting question from the 219. Will Trump at some point pardon Blagojevich?
He certainly teased it. This is people's lives, and he's got daughters and a wife, and I hope he's not playing games with him. If you're going to do something, do it. If you're not, don't. But don't play on people's emotions, particularly at the holidays.
Trump impeached. Trump resigns. Trump decides not to run. Trump loses his bid. Trump goes to jail. How does it end from the 219?
Well, I predicted he wouldn't win the New Hampshire primary. So,
so you're the wrong guy to ask. Well, I'll start. You guys can jump in. Here's how it ends, I believe. In the next 12 months, keep in mind, I'm the guy that said he wouldn't last a year. But in the next 12 months, as things run their course, it will be made clear to him, and after the Mueller report comes out, if it's as bad as we think it might be, he will resign. And some sort of what's behind door number three deal, Johnny. And I don't know if you can avoid prosecution down the road. There's certainly ways to indict him that we understand could still be played out. But I don't believe the man will go to jail. I believe he'll allow everyone else to go to jail, but I believe he will resign.
I read a report last night that his son, Don Jr., is telling his good friends that he believes he's going to be indicted, meaning Jr.
My prediction, which will most definitely not come true because predicting Trump is impossible, but I do think he doesn't resign. He's not impeached. He loses a humiliating loss in the 2020 presidential election. And then as soon as he leaves office, he is indicted by the U.S. Attorney's Office in New York, if not the Justice Department.
Every aspect, and Chuck Todd talked about this earlier, every aspect of his life is now under investigation, either criminally or otherwise, mostly criminally. And the more you watch and read, I read all the court filings, this guy has real legal problems.
Yep. Well, you had a guy in for the Lincoln Forum who's cocky and can be a little annoying, but he wrote a book that I believe was called Everything Trump Touches Turns to the S Word. It appears to be playing out that way.
Yeah.
And whether it's human beings or programs.
You can. But the more I listened to what he had to say, I thought he had more of an agenda than basing it in actual reality. But the reality is...
You're talking about the author.
Yeah. If you look at what's going on in this investigation, the circle is getting pretty tight here. And he has some real problems, particularly with the one that I think makes the difference is, did they actually conspire with the Russians to interfere in the election? And if there's 87 phone calls between Trump and the Russians... Some of those calls are likely going to be bad news.
Maybe they're just looking for a vodka recommendation.
Could be. But he said he treats the Justice Department like a New Jersey gaming regulator, and it's not working.
John, there's a question for you here from the 815. How do you get tickets for your New Year's Eve show in Downers Grove?
Oh, that's interesting. Trump also texted me as well.
Oh, so, is that right?
So this is perfect timing with the political. You go to eventbrite.com, B-R-I-T-E.
But don't get locked out. Get them today.
No, go now.
Great Christmas special.
Oh, it's like the best Christmas
present. Hanukkah may be over, but buy them for your Jewish friend.
Yeah, I mean, you were going to go to... Yes. Yes.
Eric was going to go, but he decided not to. No, it's going to be a great time.
We're going to have so much fun.
And Pat Brady, Eric Edelstein, aside from being my friends, whether you like it or not, I appreciate what you do for the show, and the audience very much appreciates, even if they don't like you, they appreciate the knowledge you bring every week. So thank you for that.
Happy holidays to everybody.
Happy holidays to you. Yeah, and all the best. We'll come back with Dean Richards shortly. He'll also be there New Year's Eve, eventbrite.com.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Or kiss me, kiss me good.
That's the love theme from Dean Richards live from Channel 9. By the way, I'll be at Channel 9 later this morning.
What are you doing here today?
Yeah, please alert the talent that I'll be in the building.
Well, we have new security now. We have we've built a moat around the TV station. So
they have something called the SKUs. It's the Steve Cochran Early Warning System. Whenever I come over to Channel 9.
When you get right around Damon, it'll go off.
Steve actually has Speedo, so he can swim the moat.
Yes, I was given a Speedo by Pat Brady this morning, and the good news is I'm not wearing it.
But they're very flattering.
They really are.
They are very flattering on any body shape.
Well, hold on. The scariest looking thing ever?
Speedos? Ugh.
You've never seen anything more frightening than this? Come on.
Well, okay, but right. I've seen Speedo. I saw a guy driving a rowing machine in a workout room once in a Speedo.
That's unnecessary.
Pretty.
That's weird.
No, not
that's
pretty. I was in Europe, though.
I hope you shot the rowing machine.
My 16-year-old daughter was with me at the time. She was appalled.
Yeah, if you were in Europe, just be glad he was wearing a Speedo.
Yeah, that's true.
Fair enough. What's your plan for Christmas, Dean?
The
morning show lives together, right? I mean, you got the morning show house.
Right. When Larry comes down in his pajamas and...
yawning, acting disinterested.
Robin in the kitchen baking cookies.
Conrad and you sitting cross-legged by the tree, ripping presents open.
Right. Smoking, drinking gin out of the bottle.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's a holly jolly morning show Christmas.
All right, so let's go over a couple things here. The reaction to Penny Marshall's death is understandable. She was well-loved.
Interesting, we heard tons of response yesterday, the day after her death. Nothing from Cindy Williams yesterday, which was odd because they sort of famously had a fallout at the end of the show. She quit the show a year before it went off the air.
Cindy Williams or Penny?
Cindy Williams.
Okay, I don't remember that. Was it over Lenny and Squiggy?
It wasn't neither Lenny nor Squiggy.
Mm-hmm.
Cindy Williams was upset that Laverne was getting more screen time than Shirley was. She wanted to be on more, and they were favoring the Laverne character, so she quit. And I guess there was some bad blood for a while. They've had a very up-and-down relationship, but over the last couple of years, they've appeared together. The two had reconciled, and finally yesterday, Cindy Williams did release a reaction to the death, tweeting the giant L that was, sort of the signature
Laverne.
All of the blouses of Laverne. She tweeted that with the message, "I love you, partner," and then later said, "What an extraordinary loss. My good friend Penny Marshall is gone. One in a million. Utterly unique. A truly great talent. And oh, what fun we had. Can't describe how I'll miss her."
Rob Reiner is very active on Twitter. I had totally forgotten they were married.
He tweeted a very beautiful response saying that he was lucky to have lived with her and her funny bone. Carl Reiner tweeted out yesterday that he was lucky to have had her as a daughter-in-law for not long enough. Is the way that
that's sweet.
Carl Reiner put it. So, I mean, everybody, pretty much, tweeting beautiful responses. It was just interesting that we hadn't heard from her longtime partner at all during any of the reaction yesterday.
I don't know about you, but Gary Marshall was always very nice to me, and Gary Marshall passed 2 or 3 years ago now, I think. And it just would have been great to hear Gary Marshall talk about his sister, because I vividly remember one of the last times he was on the old afternoon show that I did here, just deferring to her constantly, just saying, "Look, I talk to her every day and tell her she's the talent in the family."
Yeah, there was a mutual admiration society. They both spoke very highly of each other in their, I'm saying, fake Brooklyn accents.
Well, I it's funny you say that, because Gary would sit in here or talk to you or be anywhere, and he would become more Brooklyn and more Jewish as the interview went on.
That's right. That's very true. That's very true. That's why I think it was fake. I think, really, if you talk to him, he was, like from Minnesota or something.
Well, he's a Northwestern guy, right?
He did.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. He was very proudly
he loved Chicago.
Wildcat. Yep.
So rest in peace, Laverne. All right, so we've got a Harvey Weinstein story this week, the guy that won't go away because he's in and out of court. What did he claim Jennifer Lawrence in?
Well, one of the claims that he made was that on the night that Jennifer Lawrence won her Academy Award, that he had sex with her that night before she won her Oscar.
Because why wouldn't she? She obviously had no options at that point.
Right. Everybody knows that actresses don't have time for that sort of thing before a big award show anyway.
Was this right before she won the Oscar or after?
What he's claiming that he did before the Oscar ceremony.
Yeah.
But that's
he wouldn't lie, would he?
He wouldn't do anything that's not above board, if you'll excuse the expression.
Uh-huh. Hands, Harvey.
He has a hearing in New York today. Merry Christmas. He's charged with raping a woman in a hotel room in 2013 and sexually assaulting another woman in 2006. And the rumor was that Jennifer Lawrence would be in the courtroom just to be in his face in support of the two women that are accusing him. But now Jennifer Lawrence's spokesperson says she may not be there. They don't know yet. It's causing huge security concerns if she shows up.
Well, she's not going to heckle.
How great would that be, if she's in the courtroom? I mean, that's like a Perry Mason drama
right there,
to have somebody like that right in the front row.
Yelling, "You slept with me? Are you kidding?"
Staring laser beams into his face while all this is going on.
Yeah.
So we'll see. It's supposed to happen at 10 o'clock this morning.
We'll come back, talk a little comedy. But before we go to the break, the Grammy Hall of Fame inductees?
Interesting group of inductees. These are not Grammy Award winners, but Hall of Fame, Lifetime Achievement Award winners. You've got your Black Sabbath. You've got your George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic.
The best. I used to be in that band, as you know.
I do remember your multicolored wig that you used to wear.
I put the funk in Funkadelic.
Yes, you did. Jazz singer Billy Eckstein, Donnie Hathaway,
mm-hmm.
Julio Iglesias,
mm-hmm.
Sam and Dave, and Dionne Warwick.
Wow.
That for an eclectic group.
Wow. It's an interesting list.
That's what friends are for.
I love that song. I'm just such a sap.
Good times.
We'll come back.
And bad times. That's how I'm going to close. I don't exactly 100% sure know what I'm doing. New Year's Eve.
But you're going to close with a solo rendition of a four-part song?
I'm going to imitate Stevie Wonder, Gladys Knight, Elton John. It's going to be a part Dionne Warwick song, part Dean doing Rich Little.
By the way, one of the reasons I love that song is because I love Gladys Knight. And if you ever want to see what it looks like to actually sing, watch Gladys Knight hit some notes in that song. Mm-hmm. She's unbelievable. Yeah, unbelievable.
Really, she's phenomenal.
All right, we'll come back. Parks and Rec, a reunion, maybe. Adam Sandler in the news, and more with Dean, because this is Moron Entertainment. Oh, and the morons are coming together nicely. You know, Dean, my mother's birthday dinner was last night. We're talking about it, and she said, well, this morons awards thing that you're talking about, what do you have? And I go, well, nothing. We've got a concept.
Has she heard us?
I said, we got a concept. We may have a theater.
Yep.
And Brad Most and company are coming up with a logo. I mean, what do you need other than that?
Yeah, that's good enough. That's more than we've ever done with anything else.
That's why we're morons.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor. Channel 9720.
Am I the only one that's not a huge Parks and Rec fan? I mean, I get it. I thought it was funny and there were a bunch of breakout stars, but it never knocked me out. Am I the only one that feels that way?
You are the only one, yes.
Okay. I never watched it either.
I liked it.
I was a big Office fan, but not. I thought Park and Rec was just okay. So when are we
going to see the documentaries they're all shooting?
Did you dislike the parks more than the recreations, or the recreations more than the parks?
Tough to call. Tough to decide. But you know, I mean, listen, it's a funny show. I get it. So they're going to do a reunion?
They're getting together. The whole cast is getting together, not for a TV special, but at Paley Fest LA. It's to celebrate the show's 10th anniversary. Kind of a big LA showbiz deal. Amy Poehler, Nick Offerman, Aziz Ansari. Supposedly Chris Pratt, who's probably the biggest of them all right now, is supposed to be there. And that's going to be March 15th through 24th in Hollywood.
Let's do a mini text question between now and 10. Give me a TV series that's an actual series you remember. You pray to God never has a reunion. 312-981-7200 is the number. For instance, if you said, good news, the ALF reunion is on, I'm probably not going to watch it. Got one?
Give me a break.
Give me a break.
Yeah.
Rerun?
A break.
The late Nell Carter.
Yeah.
That was rerun, right?
No, that's what's happening. That I would watch. Okay. I don't know why. Yeah. I am a big fan of the show. What's happening? It's as stupid as can be, but there's something kind of charming about it also.
What happened on Give Me a Break?
Give Me a Break was, remember Nell Carter?
I remember Nell Carter, yeah.
She was the the housekeeper for three children and this always grumpy old guy that was a policeman.
Apparently, I never watched it.
Wow. Well, yeah, that was...
Johnny, got one?
Yeah, I have...
Oh, apparently we're out of time.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I just... I brought my magic wand, and I feel awkward now.
And you received three wishes.
Right. Behind door number two. Three's Company.
You wouldn't watch a Three's Company? Well, of course, it'd be tough to do now with Ritter.
I know, but it's just the whole...
Can you imagine a Three's Company reunion now? The women are pushing 70, I would think.
It's like Golden Girls now.
And somebody else would have to play John Ritter.
When was the last time you saw Suzanne Somers on TV? She was doing a commercial or something. They've smoothed out her face so much she doesn't even have features.
Yeah. You can't even recognize her.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
It's like an eye.
Yeah, it's not good.
Eyes of steel, though.
Yeah,
yes. Thigh-master.
Dave, you got one?
I'd like to see an updated version of a show you won't remember because you're too young, but it's called it was called Good Morning World, and it was a sitcom about a morning DJ. And his
Ronnie Schell.
And Ronnie Schell was like the news guy, yes. Right? I forget the guy who was the DJ. And Billy DeWolf was the annoying station manager.
Oh, my God.
And it's on like Antenna TV on Saturday nights overnight.
I have no recollection of it.
Yep. And in your defense, there's only, I think, 17 episodes.
Right. I don't think it lasted.
It did not last.
But
long.
An updated version of that show.
All right. Well, let's expand it then because you want to see that. A reunion you want to see or one you definitely don't want to see? I'll tell you where it's time. It's overdue. Flintstones reunion, right?
Oh,
I mean, how many of you wonder what Joe Rockhead's been doing all these years?
Oh, Joe. Ooh. I think about Joe a lot.
Were you talking live action or animated, though?
Please. Oh, good point.
Please, animated. Animated.
Good.
Adam like Sandler is...
Joe Pesci is Mr. Sprocket?
Was Mr. Slate?
The boss? Space.
Oh, yeah. No, that's wrong the other show. One.
Mr. Slate. Slate Rock and Gravel.
Okay.
Please, come on. It's like blasphemy that you don't know this. Adam Sandler did a tribute to
Chris Farley. We acknowledged yesterday. We were playing clips of Chris Farley yesterday. 21st anniversary of his death.
Isn't that crazy? Wow.
Isn't that amazing? When he was found drug overdose, turned out at the Hancock Building in 1997 on Adam Sandler's Netflix special, which is being streamed right now. Adam Sandler does like a 6-minute song tribute to Adam to Chris Farley. Here's just a little bit of it.
On Saturday night, my man would always deliver. Whether he was the bumblebee girl or living in a van down by the river. He loved the Bears and Nick could dance at Chippendales with Swayze. He was the sexiest gap girl and meatloaf in the band. Without him, there'd be no lunch lady in lunch lady land. You know what I'm thinking about my boy Chris Farley.
That's cool. That's really cool.
It talks about all the hilarious characters, but it also talked about how everyone tried to warn him, don't wind up like Belushi or John Candy.
Right.
Everyone said, slow down. He talks about everyone flying to Madison, Wisconsin for the funeral, and how the only thing sadder than his death was seeing Chris Farley's father crying at his funeral. Ugh. It's very emotional. Very, very emotional.
Well, I mean, the song's got kind of a Springsteen vibe to it.
Totally.
Right?
It sounds like,
yeah,
Springsteen.
Very much so.
It's on YouTube, or check out the Adam Sandler special that's on Netflix right now. It's really funny, but this is a highlight moment.
Dean will back me up on this. Of all the stars you come across, the biggest names in show business, whether you believe they earned it or not, whether you like their movies or TV shows or not, Adam Sandler is just a good guy.
Yeah.
He's just a good dude.
He really is.
I never met him, but that's good to hear.
All right, so New Year's...
fondly, John.
That's with the what?
He speaks of you fondly.
Oh, my God.
Nice of you to pretend
I did
like
meet
you
him.
Don't know him.
I did. Well, it's just an issue.
New Year's Eve, Adam Sandler will not be there. We don't need him. We got Rocky Laporte and Dean Richards and John DeCoste, Ross Cochran, me, Tim Benker, and we'll all be live at the Tivoli in Downers Grove. Dean, if you weren't doing the show New Year's Eve, what would you be doing?
I would be wondering, should I drive out to Downers Grove?
Oh, sure.
Or should I stay at home in my underpants?
Somehow I feel we could marry those two.
That's
tickets.
What friends are for.
Again, be ready for Dean's one-man version of That's What Friends Are For.
Eventbrite. B-R-I-T-E. Yeah,
very nice. Eventbrite.com. That's why you're the music director of the show. Thank you, John. John.
John.
Well, thank you, John. Thank you, Dean.
Thank you, Joe.
We're back at the headlines next at 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Here comes the sun, tootin' tootin'. Here comes the sun, and I say, it's all right.
It is 8:55. John DeCoste here, Dave Ennett's here, Mary Vanderbilt's here. If you guys don't mind, I got a couple of texts I need to return. If you guys could just take the show for a minute or two.
Here. Oh, yeah, sure. So, John, let's play Bowl or No Bowl.
Okay.
Listen, I can't help but notice that I just heard you wanted to do something we just did.
Oh, well, so, I'm sorry.
Take the show. Okay. And, you know, maybe you could just talk. I mean, would it kill you two just to talk?
No,
maybe catch up?
Let's talk a little bit.
Dave, I think what I just came up with this. You want to do that Bowl or No Bowl thing?
I don't think Steve wants us to.
All right, so I'm going to come back on now because clearly I can't count on you two to actually take over the show.
No.
Mary
Vanderbilt?
Mary, would you jump in here and just... I just have a couple of texts I need to return.
What,
that's all.
Are you trying on your Speedo or what?
No, fortunately I'm not.
Mary, what? You said the traffic was really backed up when you came in this morning.
It
was that the same for you, Dave?
Backed up. It was just crowded.
I made the point that if 45,000 people have left the state in the past year, that traffic should be getting better.
You would think.
And unless, unless they're leaving.
I just looked up the 45,000 that left. Only six of them had cars. So that's what that's
so
the problem.
Didn't help.
And construction continues.
And construction
whenever there's construction, of course.
Wouldn't it be funny if 45,000 construction workers left and we wouldn't have to deal with all of that?
Steve, are you done yet?
I didn't notice.
Are we bad?
I wasn't actually listening because I was returning a couple of texts.
We just did bowl or no bowl.
Oh, you did? Oh, that's fine. Mini text question of the day, good till 10 o'clock, is this. What TV show would you like to see a reunion of? What TV show do you say a prayer at night that they'll never do a reunion of? 312-981-7020. You got one?
I got one. Welcome back, Cotter. Did he get it?
Yes or no?
I was doing my horse
show. Oh, that was good.
That was good.
Oh. Is that a yes you want a reunion or no you don't?
I kind of do. Do you? Oh. I like that show. I didn't like Cotter, but I like the characters.
I think I'm mesmerized by the thought of Vinnie Barbarino still being in high school.
I think they'd have to be their kids or something.
Yeah, that's about
right. I think it would be funnier if they were still in high school.
Well, they probably would be.
Mr. Cotter.
Didn't Horseshack die?
Yeah, and so did...
And why am I saying it quietly?
I know.
The family doesn't know,
Steve.
And Juan Epstein.
He passed away, too.
Did he?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of a bad thing. Well, we'll have Travolta back.
He was on the show. Remember when Juan Epstein came in?
I don't.
He did?
Yeah, he was on the show.
We'll have a dual obscene or whatever John Travolta called. What's her name?
Oh, yeah. The woman from Frozen.
Yeah.
He called her Idina Menzel. He called her Abdullah Mazina or something.
Oh, very good.
Texter says, I want to see Bosom Buddies with Tom Hanks.
Oh, that was a good show.
That's tremendous.
That was a good show.
Tremendous. Mary Hartman.
Oh, yeah.
She had the pigtails going on.
That was that whole thing.
It's kind of weird.
Fernwood
like
Tonight.
It was like the time of soap. That was kind of a weird show, too. Yeah.
No to the banana splits.
Oh, I would love to see
the banana splits.
One banana, two banana, three banana, four.
Five banana.
Yes to St. Elsewhere. Yes to MASH. I don't know if they can tell any more stories on MASH. Here's one I'd like to see because I watch it every night at 8:30. A WKRP rerun or reunion.
You know, it's funny you bring that up. You know,
I watch it every night on MeTV.
We live it every day right here.
Yeah, except our studios are better.
They show those photos of the stars from the 70s and 80s now, and I could not believe. I forgot her name on the show. She was the second woman. On the show.
Bailey.
Bailey Cordes.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Well, she's gotten older.
I know, but...
Yeah, she was Babelicious.
Everybody else looks pretty good.
Babelicious back in the day.
Yes. I liked her better than...
Lonnie Anderson.
Rosie O'Donnell.
She wasn't on the show.
Lonnie Anderson.
Yeah. Now, Mr. Carlson is dead. He passed away.
Oh, okay.
And so did his mom. Because she was older.
What about the sales guy?
So Herb's alive.
Yeah, Herb's alive?
Herb's alive. Howard Hessman, who played Johnny's alive.
Was it Herb Tarlick?
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, maybe the closest representation of an actual radio guy on that show. Tim Reed.
Tim Reed. And he still looks good.
He looks great. He looks fabulous.
What's his name?
Venus Flytrap.
Venus Flytrap. Yeah.
Which, by the way, I used that name for years.
Yeah, worked out well
for me. But I don't know if Les Nessman's still alive, and he was one of the great characters on the show.
Yeah, he is kind of in seclusion in Seattle.
Not healthy, we don't know?
Not all that healthy. Yeah, okay. He's kind of frail.
Too many turkeys fell on his head.
Yeah. Yes.
God is my witness. I thought turkeys could fly. But it's a very, very entertaining show for us, as you would imagine. And it's still got some very funny moments. But if you wonder where I am between 8:30 and 9, I'm watching WKRP in Cincinnati.
But see how all the radio newsmen keep track of each other? So he knew exactly where he was. Yeah. Schwani knew.
He must have seen it
at
a meeting.
That's so funny.
Yeah, I probably saw him at one of the meetings.
You're absolutely right.
You think about the show itself. I can promise you, unlike Dr. Johnny Fever, I'm not here at 7 o'clock at night when everybody goes home. And I can also promise you that Ro is not coming in the morning when everybody comes to work. And the studio itself only had one microphone, and they had to swap chairs.
And they never wore headphones. Yeah, that's weird.
But it's good fun. And I got nothing from MeTV for plugging it. Trump's had a tweet storm. Hopefully we won't have time to talk about it. CLTV has joined us. Hi to everybody there. And thank you for simulcasting the show in the 9 o'clock hour and 3 to 4 with Ro and Anna. And we'll come back. We got a break here, David? Yeah. Take a break.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1.
The Steve Cochran Show presents Breakfast with a Blackhawk, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
Meanwhile, have the Blackhawks begun to turn this thing around? Looked awfully good a couple of nights ago. And you know, Dave, one of the really good stories as we get into Breakfast of the Blackhawks, sponsored by MB Financial Bank, MB means business, Dylan Strome came here and you go, we like Schmaltz, I don't know. He's been great. Just great. So let's get him on right now. And welcome to the program, Dylan.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Steve.
Pleasure to have you on, man. I really love the way you're playing.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
So what's different here that you didn't have before in your young career?
I think a lot of things. I think the main one is obviously opportunity. Jeremy's been really, really liking my game and giving me a great opportunity to succeed and playing really good minutes and obviously playing with some really, really talented players. So along with that, with playing on the power play, I think you're getting a great opportunity to produce and to be a positive player for the team. And I'm trying to do my best, and hopefully we can get some more wins. But it's been working out okay so far, and I'm having a lot of fun.
You think you're going to continue, or do you have a sense you're going to continue with DeBrincat and Kane? You centering that line?
I think we've been working pretty well. Last game I was with Anisimov and Kane, but we still played some shifts with Alex there. Obviously there's so many talented players in this team that everyone can make plays. It's so much fun to be out there making plays. The guys that love to create offense and love to produce. So it's a lot of fun to be out there. And when you're playing with like such a skilled player in Kane and DeBrincat and anyone, a lot of the forwards, it's just, it makes hockey so much more fun and enjoyable to be out there.
Dylan, tell us about your history with DeBrincat, going back to Erie and back when you guys were both up and coming prospects,
as opposed to the old man you are now.
These old 21-year-old guys now.
My first year in Erie, he wasn't there. He was still playing at LFA, and so. My second year, he came on board, and one of our scouts found him. They went to watch a different player on his team, actually, and then ended up noticing him, and he joined our team. He's just the happiest guy always. He loved to score goals. He just was a straight shooter, and he was so much fun to be around, and we became best friends instantly. So ever since that, his second and third year, we lived together actually at the same billet house, and we became line mates in those second and third years, and his last year, my last year, we won the championship. So much fun to play with, so much fun to live with, and we have such a good time on and off the ice, and I think that's why our chemistry is so good, just because we know each other so well, and we have a special bond together, and I know he's a great guy off the ice, and obviously he can score goals and make plays on the ice, so. Knowing to get that combination with such a good quality person and that type of skill on the ice, usually you're going to create a real good player on the ice, and that's what obviously the Blackhawks have with him.
I think what I hear you saying, Dylan, Dave, see if you picked up the same thing, is that DeBrincat owes him money. I think that's what I hear.
That was it. That's the hidden message.
You've kind of already answered this question, but the listener fan question from Tim Kavanaugh. You think it's our friend Tim Kavanaugh, John DeCause? You think he's trying to win an autographed puck from MB Financial Bank?
My guess is that yes.
Okay.
I'm going to say yes.
Tim wants to know, before you came to the team, who was your favorite Blackhawk and why? Was it, pardon me, I'm obviously emotional. Who was your favorite Blackhawk and why? Was it DeBrincat?
I don't know. I mean, I guess when I think of my favorite Blackhawks, I'm thinking of when I was not in the league and watching them. I think obviously Kaner and Taves are obviously two guys that jump out to anyone. When a team wins three cups in 5 years or 6 years, it's something that obviously everyone takes note of and everyone's watching them always. And then, you just kind of watch every game that's there on TV just because they're obviously doing something right to create such a winning culture. So I think, Taves is such a good guy to watch, but just the way he plays, defensively and offensively, it's a real treat to watch. And it's honestly a real treat to be in the same locker room and to learn from him, and and to see how he prepares and how he plays on the ice and the kind of leader he is. So he's a tremendously talented player and he really cares about the team and his players, and I think that's why he has three Stanley Cups.
How would you describe your go-to shot? Because there's a phrase in hockey, a heavy shot. And a heavy shot is can be tougher for the goaltenders to handle. And a lot of centers in the league have that kind of shot. What's yours?
I think mine's a wrist shot. I think when you're coming in on a defenseman and he's kind of screening the goalie a bit, and you can find a way to somehow get it through him, and the goalie can't really pick it up until late, I think that kind of means a heavy shot where the goalie can kind of pick it up late. And I think it's, you can kind of get two or three, maybe four of those a game where you're coming through a defenseman and you just try to get it past them. I think you're going to create, at least two really good opportunities to score. So I think that would be my type of heavy shot.
Dylan, do you feel like you've sensed a bit of a change the last few games and guys are maybe starting to create a few more opportunities and just overall playing a little better?
Yeah, for sure. I think ever since that game in Nashville, and I think we were down 3 or 4-0 in the first period.
Yep.
We really came back in then the second and third, and we were definitely the better team. And since then, I think we've been playing really, really good hockey. We lost the next two, but we were right in each game. We lost kind of really late, and then with the exception of the San Jose game, I think we probably deserve to win, the majority of the games that we've been playing. So, that's obviously a positive, and it's nice to see us getting some results. I think, with points in 3 of the last 4 and 2 wins, obviously it's something to build on and look forward to. And I think that's kind of what we're talking about in the dressing room. Just, keep building and we're getting rewarded sometimes, for the things that we're doing, and the results are finally coming with wins. So, it's nice to see that. It's nice to have that. And I think we're going to keep building towards that. And hopefully we can put together, a few in a row here.
I had a nice talk with Troy Murray and John Weideman and your coach, Jeremy Calton, a bunch of guys, at the Christmas party the other day. Did you enjoy yourself?
Yeah, I did. It was nice. I've never really been to one of those before where we the whole family skate and everything. So it was a lot of fun. They do it obviously differently in Arizona. And here it's nice to have the tradition and have the they said they've been doing it for a real long time, so just to be a part of that.
Since Patrick Kane's not a parent, did he try to pretend that you and DeBrinket were his kids and take you out there?
I don't know. He's not that old. Come on.
All right.
We're having a good time.
I listen to every game. I see most games, and I'm at a lot of games. If there's one thing I hear from the fans on the power play, it's shoot the puck! Are you guys working on just dumping the puck in and getting more shots on the power play, creating those chances you're talking about?
Yeah, I think, anytime, you hear your fans yell shoot, usually they know what they're talking about, right? So,
okay. No, but
we do need to shoot more. I think that's pretty obvious. We need to get more pucks to the net. And
Dylan, I like you. You're grounded, but I like you. You got family coming in for any games?
I've had a couple people at a couple games. My family's coming to Winter Classic, but they haven't been to Chicago yet. So they actually were in Arizona when I got traded. So it was nice to have them there and honestly helped me pack a lot of stuff because I don't know what I would have done if they weren't there. So
it's always good to have mom around. Always good to have mom around when you're moving.
Always, always, always.
Is this going to be your first Winter Classic or your first outdoor game?
Yes, so I'm looking forward to that. I've never played. I've played obviously in outdoor rinks, just being from Toronto, and
sure.
But I've never actually played in an organized game or anything along those lines. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. Mississauga, is that a Toronto suburb?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, listen, it's great having you on the show, and I think you're off to a fabulous start. So keep it going, will you?
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me, guys.
Right, appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Dylan Strome. Good
thanks,
guy. Yeah, thanks, man.
Good guy. By the way, that the Road to the Winter Classic premiered last night.
It's good.
Did you see it?
No, but I have a DVR'd and I saw the clips.
Same here. Yeah, I've
saw
seen
the
some
reviews.
Of the clips. So that I think next episode is coming up next week. So.
Tim Kavanaugh, autographed Chicago Blackhawks hockey puck, courtesy of MB Financial Bank. Man, they're great partners. We love MB.
Yeah, Tim, that sounds like fun.
MB means business. John, you went to a Hawks game with me last year. It's about time for you to go to another one, isn't it?
Yeah, I always wait till you ask, but then I always stay in the Tahoe while you're in there watching the game.
White lighting.
I don't make you sit in the car all the time.
All the time.
It just depends on your behavior during the morning. At 9:23, let's find out what's coming up at 9:30.
Bells will be ringing.
On the Steve Cochran Show All-Time Top 10. This is number one this week.
Oh, what a Christmas to have the blues. My baby's gone. I have no friends. Wish me greeting once again.
Don Henley, the saddest man in music.
Golly.
Such a great song, though. That's the kind of song you want to have at your fingertips if you get dumped Christmas week.
Isn't the video he's just sitting in jail?
Is it? I don't know.
It sounds like it should be. He'd just be looking through bars.
It's a great song. Great song. Listen, I don't know if you believe in God or not. I do. Here's a story that might make you. Parents of an 11-year-old Texas girl are thanking God after hearing from doctors that, follow me here, an inoperable brain tumor in their 11-year-old little girl has completely disappeared. Gone. Roxelle Doss is her name, south of Austin, diagnosed in June with something called diffuse intrinsic pontine glioma, a highly aggressive brain tumor with a very low survival rate. The doctors at Dell Children's Medical Center in Austin now claim they can't even spot traces of the tumor on her MRI. And they don't have an explanation for it.
That's crazy.
Isn't that great?
No, it's wonderful. Wonderful.
Every interview, I'm representing you, making you proud. Reach for the stars, so if you fall, you land on a cloud. Jump in the crowd, talking lighters, wave them around. If you don't know I'm by now, I'm talking again. About Chi-Town.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
We like to play the holiday classics for you this time of year.
I was going
to
say.
Everybody knows William Shatner did a Christmas album. There are many more celebrity Christmas albums. And tomorrow on the program, John, you'll be here tomorrow?
Yes.
Tomorrow on the program, we're going to highlight some of the worst Christmas music by some of the most famous people.
Oh, I would love that.
Jackie Gleason did an album called Merry Christmas.
But isn't that all instrumental?
Is it? I don't know.
He was a band leader.
Yeah.
So then we won't be playing Jackie Gleason.
Yeah, I don't think
Gleason's.
You'll be playing
okay.
that one, no.
Okay.
No.
The stars of Warner Brothers in 1959 released We Wish You a Merry Christmas. Features Roger Moore, 007.
Oh, God.
Doing Once in Royal David City. I don't even know what that song is. But it's a must listen, I'm told. Let's see what else we've got here. These are all terrible ideas. Oh, the Bonanza Christmas album. Christmas on the Ponderosa. yeah, Dan Blocker, Hoss, doing Deck the Halls.
Huh? Oh, yes.
Oh, man.
Come on.
Oh, that's so good.
How about no, that's wrong.
Lauren Green with that voice of his?
Yeah.
Michael Landon?
Yeah, that's a real baritone, yeah.
Yeah, Lauren Green does Christmas is a Comin', May God Bless You. I don't know that song. And Michael Landon sings Oh, Fir Tree Dear.
What?
These songs may have ended because of this album. Jim Nabors, Jim Nabors could obviously sing.
Yes.
But maybe he's not your style. Jim Nabors doing a booming collection of Christmas songs on the Jim Nabors Christmas album. I'm sure we'll find something there. The Brady Bunch Christmas album, the Partridge Family Christmas album.
Oh. Actually, the Partridge Family I had. To you and all your family, your neighbors and your friends. Yeah, that's
all
I know.
Well, don't stop.
Sorry, that's all I know.
The Sesame Street Christmas album, I'm sure, is very entertaining. As you know, Abigail, Grace, and I, we like to kick back and watch a couple episodes of Elmo's World. And that Mr. Noodle can act. I'm telling you now. So, Andy Griffith did Frosty's Winter Wonderland.
Yep.
Is that spoken word?
No. It was actually a cartoon. It was a cartoon.
But he sings.
He sings. And he's a singer anyways.
Yeah, but you still got to hear it.
We have him singing House of the Rising Sun. Well, Andy Griffith.
In his accent?
Was there a drug dealer in Mount Pilot?
There is a house in New Orleans. It's pretty good.
Okay.
Boy.
And then there's Christmas Superheroes. Here are three exciting Christmas stories with Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman. Huggy Bear from Starsky and Hutch did a Christmas album.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord.
And the Three Stooges did Christmas Time with the Three Stooges. And, of course, Shatner's Christmas album is a classic. The Dukes of Hazzard boys, Schneider and Wopat, did Home for Christmas. Of course, John Schneider fancies himself a star.
And Wopat sings.
Yeah, but Schneider had a couple of hits, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he did.
Yeah. So we'll play you some of those tomorrow on the program.
Did I ever tell you my Three Stooges story? I saw them perform live in Hillside back in 66, I think.
The original Three Stooges?
Well, no. Mo and Larry and Curly Joe Derita. So it was in a big tent out in Hillside, and my mom took me, and I bought a...
what was their live act like?
I...
Just running into each other?
Yeah, pretty much.
Each other in the head.
Yeah, pretty much.
Did your mom like the Stooges?
No, she hated them.
Well, me too.
But she knew that I liked them. So she brought me and I bought a little 45 record that said Happy Birthday, and they sing it to John.
Now, you have two sisters.
Yes.
So you couldn't go home all pumped up from the Three Stooges and poke them in the eye and
Who
do all
says I
things?
Couldn't?
Okay, I'm just checking. Just want to make sure
I used a frying pan twice.
Yeah, and I did not know the Christmas Stooges did a live show. Or Christmas Stooges. The Three Stooges did a live show. Well, they kind of are the Christmas Stooges. Yeah. And allegedly, you can still get your Christmas gifts shipped today to arrive by Christmas. I think if you don't get them out today, you're in trouble. Amazon will take you right through Sunday, I'm told. I don't know how that's even possible.
I don't get that. So, I don't understand that.
I wouldn't take chances. Three words, gift cards.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Taxi coming in here, reunion of the Munsters. Somebody wants it.
Oh, I would see that. I would like to see that.
What happened to the Mad About You reboot that was supposed to happen? I don't know. That was supposed to happen. With Helen Hunt and Paul, and it was supposed to happen.
Yeah, I think her forehead got too big.
Hey, whoa, easy.
Oh, sorry. I thought that was common knowledge.
No, but you're talking to a big forehead guy over here. As a matter of fact, I was in a blues band called the Five Heads. Family Matters without Urkel. Could you make Family Matters without Urkel? No.
He's still around.
These are reunions or not reunions.
I always feel bad for those sitcom or those TV shows like that one where Urkel took over and the cast is like, come on. Or the Lost in Space where Dr. Smith took over and the other Guy Williams was like, come on.
David Miranda, producing today, just told me that Urkel did Roseanne, the Roseanne show.
No, that they did the show where Roseanne was in without her. They only called it by the last name.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that story.
Connors.
The Connors.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yes.
So are you suggesting we kill Urkel in the same way that Roseanne
did? Not at all. He hasn't made comments that...
Okay, so we have to wait for him to say something offensive.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Then we kill him.
We ban him, yes.
Okay, I get it.
And by the way, the Mad About You show is in the hands of the studio right now. They're still trying to figure it out. Paul Reiser said.
That would probably get a pretty sizable audience.
I think so too.
Yeah, it was a great show.
I'm going to start a new feature today. I don't know if it'll last. It may only be today. I'm calling it Last Question. So if you have any questions you want to ask me, 312-981-7200, Last Question. Anything at all. Anything at all you want to ask me. This is like the Reddit thing. Ask me anything. Anything at all you want to ask, 312-981-7200. Okay?
That's pretty good.
Last question.
Last question.
Yeah, because it's the end of the show.
Did you only get one?
Yeah.
Oh, that's it? Just
one? I'll take a few.
You'll take a bunch of last questions.
The last question will be a part of that.
Okay.
I want to know if you're going to take swimming lessons now that you have your Speedo.
That's a good one.
Am I going to take swimming lessons?
Yeah, get in the water. Get in the pool.
Well, because I have a Speedo?
Well,
yeah.
It's a start.
It's a good exercise. Yeah, it's good for your knees. That would be good for you.
I've done some water therapy. And
water aerobics. Come on.
They do. Yeah, with a bathing cap. That'd be a hot look for me.
Yeah.
They do an overhead camera shot of me in the pool, and I make all sorts of designs and things with my arms and legs.
Speedos and a bathing cap. Mm-hmm. Could I have that for my calendar?
No question.
And I think if you were in a Speedo, most of us would prefer you're underwater.
Well, that's a great point. Steve, you probably,
good, Steve.
Steve, you probably were listening earlier when Pat Brady gave me this for Christmas. I don't know if you can see it on camera.
That's what I said, Steve.
I've never actually owned one. If you're watching on CLTV right now, I'm sorry. And yeah, that's an actual Speedo, size 38, that I was going to slip into.
There are no words, so, Steve.
Yeah. Exciting or what? Plus, it goes with this shirt. Huh?
And the weird thing is, size-wise, you could wear it as a cap.
Yeah, you know, it would fit my head as well. That's exactly right.
Yeah, is it just a plain thing? Doesn't it have a logo on it or something?
It's got the Speedo logo.
It's a Speedo logo. Like, it should say something on the back.
Like what?
I don't
follow too closely? If you could read this too close, what should it be?
I don't know. It's just a little plain. It needs something.
It's funny. We had two people who were ready to ask questions. They both hung up as soon as I held up the Speedo.
Oh, no, that's too bad.
What are you going to do?
Santa baby, slip the sable under the tree.
Has this been banned yet?
Being an awful good girl.
No.
This one's okay?
Not this one.
A bunch of texters chiming in from this valuable audience. We'll get to our last caller here in just a second. Last caller, last question. 870 texter just text in White Lightning.
Hey.
So they're playing along at home on the home version of the Steve Cochran Show.
I like that.
Let's see here. 630, actual vinyl records are awesome. They sound better than any other audio source. I'm starting to see vinyl pop up in a lot of places. I was in a bookstore, one of the few bookstores left, and they had like three or four racks of vinyl.
It's unbelievable. And how many did you get rid of?
Oh, all of them.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And now they're worth something.
No, I'm sure.
Turntables
are
bad.
The time.
Yeah.
You still have your turntable?
No. I just bought a cheap turntable years ago, and I play all my old records on it. I love it.
Do they have the pops?
I just bought Harry Chapin's Greatest Hits.
Oh, that's great.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. People also are texting in pictures of their corded phones. Remember my nostalgia idea from earlier in the show? Mm-hmm. I believe corded phones could come back. another helpful texter said, isn't Trump's entire administration a spoof Christmas album? I don't know, it was just Christmas kind of all year long. Some questions that have come in. What's my middle name? Lee. Stevie Lee.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess I don't think I did know that. That's good.
Is it cute? I always thought I sounded like a serial killer.
Stephen Lee.
Yeah, Stephen Lee. You know, serial killers and thugs that go from town to town, they all have middle name.
They're always James or Lee.
Right. And the Lee is always in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice. 414. Does Steve have a retirement date? No. But every time I look in the mirror, I think, wow, that old guy ought to think about
hanging
it up. Yeah. coming up on a minute before 10 o'clock, who is on at 10 o'clock today for Bill and Wendy?
I believe John Hanson.
And? We like John. Hi, John. John Hanson and?
I think, is it Violetta?
No, it's not Violetta.
I can't tell.
It's V, but not Violetta. Oh, different okay. V.
I can't see who
it
is.
Yeah. How are you? They're going to come in here in just a second. All right, last call. Brand new feature, last call. Let's go to Xavier on line 6. Good morning.
Jeff, good morning, Mr. Cochran. I love your show. It's the first time I'm in Chicago for the holidays, and I know what I'm going to do for the Christmas Day, but I don't know what is a good thing for me to do on the New Year's Eve show.
Oh, it's funny you ask, and I'm glad you called, because, yeah, we happen to be doing a show on New Year's Eve, which you might enjoy. Do you like stand-up comedy?
Yes, I love that.
Okay. It's in Downers Grove at the beautiful Tivoli Theater, and you can get tickets to see some of the great stuff. Have you ever seen Rocky LaPorte?
No.
Okay.
No.
How about John DeCoss?
No.
Does he sound like the kind of guy you'd like?
Yes.
Okay.
I hear him on the show. And
yeah, you do.
Funny.
Yeah, yeah. Tim Benker, Ross Cochran, and Dean Richards from Channel 9, along with me, we're all going to be there.
Ross Cochran, I know.
Yeah, it's going to be a very funny night. Do you like Dean Richards?
No, I don't know who that is.
Okay. Well, here's how you get tickets. You go to eventbrite.com, EVENTBRITE, eventbrite.com.
How are you spelling event?
EVENT, bright, BRITE, and you get tickets right there.
Gracias. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you, Xavier.
He's kind of the X Factor.
I don't know if John does that voice very often, does he?
Was that John?
Ah, yeah. Yeah, it was. Yeah. 10 o'clock. We got to go.